Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on the Heritage Radio Network with me, your host, Erica Wides. So about a year ago, I was invited to be on the Dr. Oz show. Do you remember that? Did you watch it? Just say yes. I was on a panel on Dr. Oz with two other people to discuss all the scary ingredients and other creepy stuff that you find in fast food. As if you needed a panel of experts on national TV to shine the harsh light of reality on that elusive fact. It was okay by me, though, because national TV is national TV, and it ultimately got me my TED Talk, so all the better. Did you see my TED Talk? Just say yes. Now, one of the topics that they specifically asked me to address on the show was the way that the fast food industry processes pre-grilled chicken. Not the kind that's actually grilled in-house in the restaurant on a real grill, which some actually do, but no, the kind that you take out of a bag of frozen chicken breasts that have the grill marks actually already on them. Now, years ago, I took food science classes for chefs, and the classes were taught by guys who work in the processed food and foodiness industry. And they told us how the grill marks were actually just stamped on the chicken with smoke-flavored dye. So I had that information, and then I also called my super secret contact at Unilever to get me the inside line. And she said that they either do that, which is stamp them on, or they grill them on basically a giant panini press. She said it depended on the language on the packaging. If it said flame grilled or something like that, then they actually paninied them or put them on a grill. If it didn't, it was just stamped city. So fascinating. So I went on Dr. Oz and I gave my spiel about the chicken and a few other topics. And I tried to get a few mentions of foodiness in there too. But of course, they edited all of that out at the end. And that was that. Now, fast forward almost exactly a year to the week, and now I'm auditioning for a promo spot on the Food Network. And at least when I auditioned, they said it was a promo for a new show where I'd play a mentor to an amateur cook in a recreation of a new competition show that'll be airing on the Food Network. And I got the job. Yay. And then I get the email with the job details. Not yay, because yes, it is a promo for the show, but really, it's an ad. It's a product tie-in with a sponsor, and guess what the product is? Frozen, pre-grilled chicken breasts. Yay! Uh-oh. This is the dilemma I feared when I started doing commercials, but I agreed to do the job. I need the money, and I'm making plenty of positive change in the world through the millions and millions of people worldwide who listen to the show, so it's okay. It all kind of balances out. Or at least that's what I keep telling myself. Now, the premise of the Real Food Network show, the one that we are promoting, the one that they didn't ask me to be on, just on the promotion, is a competition. Oh, how unusual for the Food Network, a competition show between two amateur cooks, and each has a professional chef mentor teamed up with them. And the amateur cook has to create a dish with mentoring. Now, in this case, the dish has to be based around the frozen pre-grilled chicken breasts. Oh, and there's also a regional angle because one team represents the Northeast and one team represents the South. Now, guess which one they put me on? Correct, the South. And my mentee was from Memphis. And let's just say that he and I didn't really see eye to eye. I'm going to just leave it at that because I think I signed something that I may have already violated. And I could not stand the guy whom I was mentoring. And he had no idea about what to make, other than some vague mutterings about gravy, which he couldn't even describe to me, or making biscuits, even though we only had 30 minutes, or maybe make a salad. Those were his ideas. And he turned out to be the worst cook I have ever encountered. Seriously, the worst. And I taught for 15 years. And if you've never noticed before, I'm a very competitive person. So let's just say it didn't really turn out well. But the bags of pre-grilled chicken breasts got me thinking about stuff like how we still can't seem to get beyond the fatphobic mania of the last three decades and how terrible grilled chicken breasts really can be, especially if they're dry and overcooked, which most are because nobody really knows how to cook them properly, and how I feel like I probably ate a million piles of mixed greens with sliced grilled chicken breast over them for way too many meals in the fatphobic years, and I can't stand the sight of another one. But that's really what these bags of breasts are meant for, the grilled chicken salad. It just won't go away. Please make it go away. Please just stop it. Why can't we as a species evolve beyond the consumption of just chicken breasts? Chickens have other parts, you know. They have legs and thighs and wings. Can't we just move on? But this show today isn't really a show about chicken. It's actually a show about salad. Although before I drift too far away from all those open bags of pre-grilled chicken breasts that were littering the set, I do want to mention that the ingredient list on those bags of grilled chicken should have just said grilled chicken. But they didn't. This is what they said. Boneless, skinless chicken breast with rib meat, water, rice starch, natural flavor, maltodextrin, which is sugar, salt, dextrose, which is sugar, dried garlic, dried onion, yeast extract, soy sauce solids, grill flavor, mesquite smoke flavor, and lactic acid. Grill flavor. I need to get a bottle of that to keep next to my birthday flavor and my cookie dough flavor on the flavor shelf in the pantry of the Fallout Shelter kitchen. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, oh, so much more.
You are listening to Never in Love by Four Lincolns on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on, where are we? Not on Food Network, on Heritage Radio Network. Oh my God. With me, your host, Erica Wides. So I digress, as this is a show about salad, as I keep saying, and salad dressing. Because the terrible mentee suggested we make a salad. That was all he could come up with. Gravy or salad? In February, a salad of tomatoes and cucumbers. Okay, now maybe I shouldn't always be so mean or judgmental, but that's what you pay me to do. Or so tough on him, because he was representing the South, and in the South they have tomatoes and cucumbers for more months of the year than we do, and he may not be so seasonally aware or enlightened, but I vetoed him. I suggested that we make a winter vegetable slaw or a shaved winter vegetable salad, but the pantry offerings that they gave us didn't quite support that. And so we didn't, and that's all I can say because I think I've already violated my non-disclosure. So let's move on. So on the drive home, I got all excited thinking about winter salads because I was trying to tone down my rage at him. And I started thinking about winter salads because you can make a salad in every season if you just think outside of the lettuce bag. Now, I've also been thinking a lot about salad dressing since Thanksgiving. I tend to hold on to things. When we went to a certain family member's house and they served at Thanksgiving an iceberg lettuce salad, which has no place on a Thanksgiving menu to begin with, or anywhere else really, and they pulled out a huge bottle of Kraft bottled Italian salad dressing, like Costco size bottle, from the fridge and planted it right there on the table at Thanksgiving. Now, way back when I was a young line cook right out of school and starting my indentured servitude, my externship, I, like many more before and after me, was placed on the garde-manger station. Garde-manger is where most cooks start in a kitchen. It's the cold station. Salads, cold appetizers, charcuterie. Sometimes the garde-manger person plates desserts too. And you're basically doing everything that isn't coming off of the hot side of the line. My first task on garde-manger was to dress and individually plate the mixed green salads as they were ordered. Now, this was 20 years ago, and it was at one of the first farm-to-table restaurants in New York, and our salad greens were all these interesting, different exotic lettuces that I had never seen before. The idea of mesclun mix as the standard salad in the U.S. was very new. At the time, in the early 90s, most people were still stuck in the iceberg and romaine and maybe greenleaf rut. Our greens came right off the back of the farmer's truck in big crates covered with dirt, like right from the farm. And it was all very new and exciting back then, the idea of buying directly from the farm and taking the deliveries right off the trucks instead of ordering this stuff kind of randomly through a wholesaler. We actually knew the farmers. It was very revolutionary. And the greens were so fresh and so organic that sometimes after we would plate the salad, a little spider would come crawling out of the greens and onto the rim of the plate. As the greens were organic, as I said, the spider hadn't been killed by being doused with pesticides out in the field and somehow made it through and then lived on through the washing and the spinning dry and the dressing and the tossing before emerging triumphantly onto the rim of the plate where the little spider would look up and wave at me as I sent the plate out the kitchen door. That's where I learned the art of spin, because if a customer saw the spider crawling out of their plate, the waiter would explain to them that the greens were so organic that even the spiders could survive, and then the customers got all excited and wanted to pay even more. Now, we dress those salad greens with just a tiny pinch of salt and a basic vinaigrette. The vinaigrette was made of Dijon mustard and balsamic vinegar because it was the 90s and good olive oil, and that was it. That's what a vinaigrette is, oil and vinegar and something to emulsify them together, like mustard or egg yolk or honey, something sticky or not. A vinaigrette can be unemulsified too, just tossed in a bowl with oil and vinegar or lemon juice. That's a vinaigrette too. A vinaigrette, not a vinaigrette, as so many of my old students used to say, and so many waiters at poor to middling and chain restaurants like to say, vinaigrette, like we make it out of tiny vinegar. It's a vinaigrette. And oh, there are plenty of other types of salad dressings too, like real Caesar dressing and real green goddess and buttermilk and all kinds of dressings. You can make all sorts of dressings for salads, but did you get the key word there? Make, not pour from a bottle. We've already discussed what a real vinaigrette is, the dressing that Kraft et al. Call Italian for some inexplicable, ridiculous reason. Why do they call it Italian when it's actually French, whereas French is that kind of sweet neon orange weird stuff that doesn't exist anywhere actually in France? And you know, you want to know what's in Kraft so-called Italian dressing? Well, soybean oil and canola oil. Blech, industrial refined oils, vinegar, sugar, it's the third ingredient, thickeners like xanthan gum, and two preservatives, blech, blech, and more blech. And that's just in their basic so-called Italian. Let's check out the low-fat ingredient list. Water, vinegar, sugar, two thickeners, two artificial colors, and two preservatives. Can we please, please now just get over the fat fear and eat real food? Do we still need 10 different kinds of low-fat food in a salad dressing? Please? Anyone? Now, I know that none of you would ever sink so low as to use bottled salad dressing, right? And I thought my certain relative wouldn't either, but there was that big economy-sized bottle right there on the table, next to my roasted heirloom carrots and my beautiful glazed beets and my Brussels sprout slaw and their sausage stuffing made from a box and the iceberg lettuce salad. Oh, well, I try. So where was I? Oh, yeah. Winter salads. So I've been doing so many shows lately where I'm just dumping on the foodiness industry and dumping on the food world. I've gotten away from talking about food, which is really what the heart and soul of this show is all about, food. So let's talk about the salads of winter. Let's go back to the old days when I used to actually talk about food and cooking on my first show, Why We Cook. There are 100 episodes of it on iTunes, by the way, if you need some entertainment. Now, first of all, I fear that the kale salad, which has totally crossed over into the mainstream as it's on the menu now at the Cheesecake Factory, is poised to become the mesclun with grilled chicken of the 20-teens. You can't swing a dead heirloom breed chicken around here anymore without hitting a kale salad these days. But you know what? That's okay. Because do you know how hard it used to be to even find dark leafy green vegetables on restaurant menus not that long ago? Kale used to be used as a garnish. I used to go around eating everybody's garnish just so I could get some nutrition. So I'm okay with the ubiquity of kale salads. I'm okay with one being on every menu. Please stay around. I need them when I'm in Indiana or New Jersey. Don't go anywhere. If it means America is eating kale, all the better. Cover it with creamy ranch, add bacon, put marshmallows on it, cookie dough, whatever you want, just keep serving it. Just don't let me catch you canoodling with a grilled chicken breast kale salad, or we're going to have some problems. But other winter salads have their place too, like cabbage slaws and Brussels sprout slaws and shaved stuff like a shaved carrot, beet, and parsnip salad. Raw turnips are so good, endive or endive, depends who you are. Shaved raw fennel with red onions and oranges, they're all so good. It's not about lettuce in the winter. It's about heartier stuff and being creative. Unlike you-know-who, the mentee, who had not a single creative idea in his thick head, you are different. You can do so much with winter produce. Almost anything can be eaten raw or just wilted. Add some grapefruit or oranges and olive oil and some good salt, and boom, winter salad. Don't cave in to out-of-season lettuce. Take up the winter salad challenge. And to show you how much we've crossed over in America and how easy things have gotten, you can even buy a bagged shredded blend at Costco now made up of, get this, kale, shredded cabbage, shredded Brussels sprouts, and shredded radicchio. I know! I've been buying it every week because I'm lazy too. And price-wise, it's way cheaper than buying all of those vegetables separately and then shredding them yourself in the kitchen, which takes too much time and makes a mess. Now, it does come in a bag with a pouch of nasty, creamy poppy seed dressing. That's all corn syrup and other crap. But I just throw that bag away and I make my own dressing, and it's a really good salad. It's shocking. From Costco, in the mainstream. Are you getting my point here? 20 years ago, it was iceberg lettuce city in America or spider salads at swanky restaurants. Now at the big box store, you can get a bag of shredded raw radicchio and Brussels sprouts. That's progress. And this is me in a rare optimistic moment, so please enjoy it while it lasts. So there's no excuse for crappy foodiness salads in the winter. We've come too far to go back now. If you can buy that bagged mix at Costco or get a kale and quinoa salad at the Cheesecake Factory, there's no turning back. We're making progress here in America. Together, we can do it. We can fight the foodiness battle. Just say no to bad winter salads and pre-grilled chicken breasts and bottled dressings. Stand up and fight for your right to good salads all year round. And if you don't want to eat salad or any other shit, you better keep on listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on Heritage Radio Network with me, Erica Wides, or we're going to have a problem. And if I catch you canoodling with a pre-grilled chicken breast, we're going to have to talk. I don't think I can be your mentor anymore. That's it for the show this week. Thanks to Jack Inslee in the control room and Chris Nutter, my co-producer. And remember to follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. Find us on Facebook. Check out all the older shows of Let's Get Real and Why We Cook on iTunes or on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org website. Check out my website, Let's Get Real Show, and that's it. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.